This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America on this edition of the program. In the wake of widespread demonstrations across the United States against police violence and racial injustice after George Floyd died in police custody, the slogan "Defund the Police" has been reverberating among protesters. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. What does defund the police really mean? How can we reimagine policing in America? What should police reform look like? We will discuss the conditions in America that led to the killing of George Floyd, who died after a white Minneapolis police officer, who has since been charged with second-degree murder, pressed his knee into Floyd's neck for almost 9 minutes until he could no longer breathe. Will Floyd's death do what the killings of so many African Americans before him, Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Freddie Gray, Tamir Rice, Walter Scott, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, Alton Sterling, and Philando Castile did not? Could this moment be a turning point for changing the culture of policing in America, which analysts say is permeated with racial bias and relies on the disproportionate use of deadly force? That is what many are hoping for. The U.S. Congress last week proposed sweeping police reform legislation called the Justice in Policing Act of 2020. George Floyd's brother testified on Capitol Hill last week, just one day after his brother's funeral. He told lawmakers that the killing of his brother was, quote, a modern-day lynching in broad daylight, end quote. He implored members of Congress to, quote, honor George and make the necessary changes to make law enforcement the solution and not the problem, end quote. According to a VOA News web article by Ken Bredemeier and Catherine Gibson, the new legislation proposed by the majority Democrats in the House of Representatives, quote, seeks to ban chokeholds and no-knock warrants in drug cases at the federal level while pressuring state and local governments to enact similar prohibitions by withholding federal funding for police forces, end quote. The same report says that the legislation would make it easier to hold police officers accountable for their actions. According to multiple news reports, the bill would also establish a national registry of police misconduct, which would prevent a reckless officer from getting hired at another police department. It would also limit the transfer of military-grade equipment to state and local law enforcement, require federal uniformed police officers to wear body cameras, and prohibit federal, state, and law enforcement from using racial and religious profiling. U.S. President Donald Trump, meanwhile, doubles down on a law and order message. He has called for police crackdowns on protesters and expressed an interest in using the U.S. military to quell protests, for which he received tremendous pushback from several current and former senior military officials. We will talk with our guests about the possibility of adopting a so-called guardian and not a warrior model of policing. Joining me to talk about the state of policing in America in the wake of George Floyd's death are two distinguished analysts who join me via Skype as we continue to social distance. Reggie Miller is president of the Nashville, Tennessee chapter of the National Black Police Association. The NBPA is a nationwide organization of African-American police associations dedicated to the promotion of justice, fairness, and effectiveness in law enforcement. And Sam Fullwood III, he's a senior fellow for politics and elections at the Center for American Progress, a liberal policy group here in Washington. Sam is also the former director and founder of American Progress's Leadership Institute, and that's a program that assists with the advancement of people of color in public policy. A journalist by profession, Sam was previously the national correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, where he contributed to the paper's Pulitzer Prize-winning coverage of the 1992 LA riots. And Reggie Miller joins us from Nashville, Tennessee. Reggie, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Sam Fullwood III, it's so great to have you back on the show.
I'm happy to be back with you, Carol.
Let me begin first with Reggie Miller. Reggie, what do you think the protests, which encompassed a pretty multiracial and ethnic coalition, augur for this moment? Are we at a turning point that could perhaps catalyze much needed police reform across America?
The answer to that would be yes, in my book. Definitely what we have seen is definitely a movement. I think when we saw the Rodney King beating, I think that people were really, really upset. I think now with George Floyd, everybody could connect to that. Mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, everybody could connect to that. And so what we're seeing now is a total sweep, a total change. I mean, everybody is getting involved, not just in cities and states, but all over the world. This is truly a movement. So yes, a change is definitely coming, and we're right here in the midst of it.
Sam Fulwood, turning to you, do you see a veritable movement in progress? Is this moment going to catalyze change, in your view, meaningful change in America?
I think change is inevitable. I'm probably not quite as sanguine about it as Reggie and a whole lot of other people are. I'm not contradicting what he said at all. But I think because I have seen supposed movements for change burst into the scene, garner a great deal of attention, and then die down once the news items change the subject. And so I would like to see whether this is actually going to have the legs that a whole lot of progressive people would like for it to have. The reason I'm somewhat wary about being a little bit too euphoric at this being a really definitive moment is that the demands that people are making for change would have to work through a political system that is dysfunctional. And unless we figure out a way to make our politics work, the change may get stymied. It may be creating a latent form of anger only to erupt in another way going forward. One other thing I'd like to say about the change moment. One of the things that really struck me about what has happened in the past couple of weeks has been the universality of the anger and the outrage, which we haven't really seen in this country before. And that's giving lift to people thinking that that's going to happen, that change is on the precipice. But I think that we have been slowly building toward this moment because of demographic change that's taking place in the country. And I think this is kind of an eruption of the fact that the country is rapidly becoming less white male dominated and more diverse. And the people that you see in the streets over the past couple of weeks in all the major cities and around the world reflect the fact that the world is changing from being one where Western white maledom has been the dominant force of what's going on.
That's a very interesting point. And on that point, Sam, a Monmouth poll released in early June, conducted in the days after Floyd's killing, showed for the first time that a majority of Americans, 57%, and a plurality of whites believe police are more likely to use excessive force against African Americans. And some say this really does represent a tectonic shift in public opinion. And you mentioned also the demographics of the protesters, a broad coalition. So let's see. But let me go back to Officer Miller. Reggie Miller, let's go back to policing in America. There has been accusations of systemic racism. How pervasive is racism in U.S. policing? Some say, oh, it's just a few bad apples. Others say it's kind of rotten to the core. It's more like a bushel of apples and a diseased tree. And I know that you yourself had a personal experience that you might want to share with us. What's your view?
I would definitely say that it's, in a lot of the cases, it's definitely more than just a few bad apples. Sometimes it is rotten to the core. And I think that is why people are talking about a total reform, totally breaking down the police department, trying to get it to reestablish itself on a totally different thought process that it has been for the last hundreds of years. And yes, I can speak to that personally because back in 1992, when I was working undercover, I got pulled over for an expired tag that the department had given me a vehicle to drive, and it had expired tags on it, which I didn't know. I got pulled over by some of the same guys that was in my roll call room that day. And from that, I got pulled over. There were five guys were on this traffic stop for an expired tag. And I got pulled out at gunpoint. I got, you know, choked. I got kneed in the back. I got my eyes gouged. I got kicked in the groin. And so I pursued this brutality. Of course, we were only about 10% Blacks on the police department. So now it became a separation of Blacks and whites because the Blacks supported it. You know, me standing up, me standing out, which I wasn't supposed to do because it's this thin blue line. You're supposed to take a couple of days off and they pat you on the back and just say, hey, you know, come back, man. We sorry. I wasn't letting that happen. I was bringing that out, that police brutality does happen. And the only thing that gives that validity was the fact that I was a police officer. So I always say that if that would have been my nephew or my cousin, they wouldn't have been police. And the police would have said he resisted, he did this, he did that. And he wouldn't have had no credibility. At least they would have torn down his credibility. And his case probably wouldn't have went anywhere. I did end up suing the department. It took 3 years to do it, but I stayed the course. And so ever since then, I have been on that mission to bring awareness to police brutality and the reform that it needs to have. A lot of these police departments are ran by whites. You know, a lot of the crimes, assault crimes, a lot of them are done by whites. And then they ended up getting protected, if not by the staff, the lieutenants and the captains who are white, they ended up getting taken care of by the police union. So like nothing really happens. So in that case of those five officers, two of them got fired immediately. But as you would know, they eventually got their job back and they eventually got back pay. So the result was, what happened to them? Really, nothing really happened to them.
Well, that's very interesting. And here we are so many years later, 2020, and we're seeing similar conduct. Many people are saying, you know, police administrators have to hold officers accountable, not only when they abuse other officers like yourself, but particularly when they mistreat and violate people's rights. And I think it's an interesting juxtaposition when just recently, as we are all sheltering in place because of the COVID epidemic, you may recall in Michigan, white men were armed, standing on government buildings, protesting their civil rights, and nothing really happened to them. So it's an interesting juxtaposition. You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are Reggie Miller, president of the Nashville, Tennessee chapter of the National Black Police Association, and Sam Fullwood III, senior fellow for politics and elections at the Center for American Progress. We are discussing proposals for police reform in America after widespread demonstrations against police brutality and racism. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a big shout out to Delson Jonah from Jos, Nigeria. Well, thanks, Delson. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our program. And let me turn to you, Sam Fullwood, because you're the one who brought up, you know, your sense of skepticism about if anything can actually be done vis-a-vis legislation on offer. We have a rather dysfunctional political system. We are also in an election year. What's your reaction to the proposed legislation? How confident are you that it can pass and be enforced at the local level?
I think that if anything can happen, it will happen at the local level. We have already seen in the past week or so that the Minneapolis Police Department has taken very seriously efforts to reform its police department. I'm skeptical of using the term disbanding or abolishing or defunding, because those tend to be loaded terms that, in a practical, real politics way, are impractical. There will be policing in America. We have to have that. But what that policing will look like, I think we're in the midst of great political discussions and debate about it. The thing that I think is really important to bear in mind, and I go back to the demographic change, and I'm not an advocate of demography being destiny, but I do believe that America is changing. Its mores, its values, its economic systems, all of those things are in flux at the moment. And I think a great deal of our political conversations reflect the fact that we're morphing into uncharted territory. Historically, a small number of Americans, disproportionately white and male, were the ones who were able to define what America was all about. When America was created, only landed white men could vote, could participate in the running of the so-called democracy. Well, that notion has radically changed, and it has been building over the last 50 years as different peoples in America have ascended to saying, we want to have a say in how the country is going to be run. Historically, those decisions were made at the local and state level, not necessarily at the federal level, but the federal level has stepped in whenever things seem to bog down. The civil rights movement is a classic example of that. So what we have now is a moment when in local communities, many of them disproportionately African-American or Latino or in some cases, Native American, saying we want to make decisions about how we govern our community. And that is, at the present, in opposition to what's coming out of the federal government. And so there is a tension there. And I think that what we have seen in the cities as a result of George Floyd's murder is that tension. Will they be able to pass laws, change mores and customs? I don't know. I'm not saying it won't happen, but I am not absolutely certain that it will. One of the things also that I think is really, really important in this is culture. And we're in the midst of culture change, as evidenced just this past week when NASCAR said that it was no longer going to fly the Confederate flag. That's a sign that this movement, if you will, is affecting the way in which culture is being defined. And then politics follows culture.
Well, back to you, Reggie Miller. I just want to add to what Sam said. You know, I'm here in Washington, D.C., in the maelstrom of what's going on. I went to Lafayette Park. I saw the Black Lives Plaza. We're seeing the demographics. We're seeing a coalition, a lot of Caucasians, young people, advocating for deep change, for profound change. So it's really quite, it's encouraging. But let me ask you about this so-called calls to defund police. It's a slogan. We can't necessarily, as Sam said, take it literally. We always need police. But what about the idea of redirecting funds to other areas? What's your view of rerouting funds, redirecting funds to social services, healthcare, education? Because when these things break down, crime often occurs. And then the police are called to fix the problem. And to the police's credit, you know, they just can't solve all these deep-rooted problems. What's your view of maybe redirecting funds to these other areas that could prevent a lot of crime and the use of police?
First, let me say that I agree with some of the things that Sam brought up, and there are some very good points. I am very optimistic because I've been in this fight for so long. And like you said, it does start at a local level. But because the theory that we have right now that's rooted, it's been a long history by racist policing, violence and inequality, and Blacks are being killed that are disproportionately raped by police. Black police make up about 24% of deaths, but only about 13% of the population. And when we try to get data on these things, the data has not been good because sometimes the police provide the data, and then we find out that it's skewed, inaccurate, or unreliable, or even sometimes even incomplete. And so there's not been a lot of accountability. And that's another word that we really have to talk about too, accountability and transparency, because that is what's going to hold police officers to make sure that they are doing what they're supposed to do. That holds the department accountable. And when you don't hold them accountable, when you get into these funds that we're going to talk about, or defunding the police or transferring money, I'm not for abolishing police departments, because I think that would cause a whole new area of problems and issues. I do think that what we can do is manage the monies and where they go and for what purpose. If we're going to directly give you $200,000 for strictly training, if that training is desensitizing or some type of training for the police department that is going to be community-based, that will help change the police culture. And if we're directing those funds to community-based things where the department can only use this money for certain things, and this is what they're getting, I think that that would be a good start. And Sam would probably agree that this is not going to be something that's really going to change overnight. But training reduces racial bias. And if we encourage stuff like de-escalation, if these are where you're sending your funds to different types of training like this, then the department has no choice. They are mandated to spend these funds in these areas. I think that that would be a start. Can we look at changes and where those changes need to be and restructure it? The police department, yes, we can. But I'm not for dismantling or abolishing the police department.
Very good. Quickly, I want to ask you some rapid-fire questions as a police officer, Reggie Miller. For example, a couple of the things in the legislation, would you be in favor of like a national registry of police conduct, limiting this transfer of military-grade equipment to state and local law enforcement, a mandated use of body cameras? Are those some things that you think could go a long way, and also diversifying the police force?
I do. I've been for body cameras in Nashville, Tennessee. We've been working on body cameras for the last 2 years. Our chief of police did not want body cameras. I came out strongly and said, we need body cameras, because most of the good officers, in which probably most of them are, they're not worried about a camera because they're out there doing the right thing. You'll get those bad apples, or you might find out that you have a bigger problem than you think. Part of the cases against police officers, I think that's part of one of our issues, because I know that, like Derek Chauvin, he had like 17, 18 complaints. There is no reason that that police department should start tracking history after two excessive forces, because that allows you to start tracking that officer's history. And if you let them get 15, that department knows about it. It's just a lot of different reforms that the police department has to take to show that they are willing to be accountable for their police officers.
Sam, I'd like to get your take on this concept of community policing, specific reforms that we just mentioned, the ban on chokeholds, the registry of police who have engaged in misconduct, if these things can make a difference in your view. And I'd like also for you to comment on the power of police unions. What is their purpose, and to what extent might they pose an impediment going forward?
I think the reforms that are being talked about now by a lot of people in local communities are good and necessary to have those conversations. And I am very optimistic that something will come positive out of the conversations about police reform. Body cameras, national registry, banning chokeholds, community policing to make policing more service-oriented rather than enforcement-oriented, changing the culture of what policing is all about. All of those things are really, really good. With regard to the unionization of policing, of all the unions, I think police have been the most abhorrent. Police unions have been the most abhorrent to the progressiveness of what unions are about. I get the point about worker rights, protecting pay and benefits, those kinds of things I get. But I don't get how the unions have allowed themselves to be an instrument for attacking the citizenry that the police are supposed to be protecting and serving. To be able to hide malfeasance on the part of an individual member, I don't think that that's what unionism is all about. And I think that in many ways, maybe whether real or not, that's what the police unions are perceived to be doing. And I think that that has to change.
Well, back to you for the last word, Reggie Miller, to talk about the power of police unions. As a police officer, what's your take, and to what extent are African Americans part of them, or are they excluded, and to what extent you think they might be an impediment as opposed to a force for good and reform?
I think that the history of racism and brutality, and being able to see it and witness it over years and years and years, I don't think that the especially Black police officers are blind to it. I don't think that they're going to impede any of the progress of that. What I'm actually thinking is that, and what I'm seeing, is more white police officers are coming on board to stand up for what is right and things that we've never seen before. Officers that are coming out of the fraternal order of police, like the union. FOP members are usually 95% white. So there's not a lot of Black members, but even the Black members are supposed to be protected. But when something happens to them, there's a problem with any of that protection. However, I'm seeing that the white officers are starting to stand up, and they're starting to stand beside Black officers. And I think that they are willing to now stand up and take chances that they've never taken before. And that's a good thing, because that didn't happen years ago in a lot of cases.
Well, gentlemen, we're going to end on that rather cautiously optimistic note. That is all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Reggie Miller. He's president of the Nashville, Tennessee chapter of the National Black Police Association, and Sam Fullwood III, senior fellow for politics and elections at the Center for American Progress.
Thank you, Carol. Good talking with you, Reggie.
Thank you, Carol, and I thank you, Sam. And it's always a pleasure, and let's not make this the last time.
Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.